Hey, hey, Joel Radio! It's the first show of 2016. Did you know that, Corey Hall?
That's right.
It is. Welcome to hell. Happy 2016.
Oh, we fired up. All
no,
right.
The show's on.
Oh,
this
good.
Is the show.
Sorry.
This is the show. Sorry, you can go back to sleep for a while.
No, I'm already over 2016.
Oh, you're over it?
I'm already over. It's really. Everything's gone our way so far, hasn't it? Really.
Well, it's 15 degrees out and David Bowie's dead, so that's it's a bad start. But anyway, let's get into it for a new year. Hope you enjoyed Assholes of the Year, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think we made some, looking back, first of all, the Bill Cosby thing we missed by like a day. He was indicted. Not that we didn't mention Cosby.
I thought he was on the 2014.
Yeah, he probably has been on every year for the last couple. But you know, he was indicted the day after we recorded that show, so that might have pushed him up a little bit higher.
Yeah.
So I thought of him as an omission.
Well, when we get to the assholes of the millennium, Cos will have his spot.
And then I thought the Michigan punter would be a great.
That's
to the
true.
Assholes
we did,
of the
we did forget that guy.
Forgot him, and then Steve Harvey.
Well, what about Blair Walsh, the Vikings kicker, who missed the?
Well,
that would
was
be
a
on
2016.
This year,
right? Yeah, that was a 2016.
But I mean, if you're going to put kickers, he missed a 25-yard field goal.
No, there's a lot of people already. I should start making my assholes
Steve
for 2016.
Steve Harvey,
right now. Steve Harvey,
we missed him.
Well, those memes are great because the one the other day, and you know, R.I.P. Mick Jagger. With the big picture of Steve Harvey. I thought
that
was
funny.
Yeah.
So
you
can, it's great.
Those are great.
You know, you can do them for whatever. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Oh, I did one this week.
Joel cracked one up. It was pretty good. That was
it was inside baseball, but yeah, I made one this week. But anyway.
It was very appropriate for the comedy scene.
It was. Our great comedy scene. So
we should, you know, I can't wait for the, like, you know, Oscar, the Oscar one. And the best actor is.
Well, Jamie Foxx kind of did that.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about the Globes here. Golden Globes for this week. We'll talk about that. I guess we'll talk about David Bowie, but let me just tell the speaking of comedy, I'll just tell the story. I did a unique comedy show last week.
One that paid money?
Yeah, that would be that would be even more unique than the one that I did. No, I did something called 50 First Jokes, which is 50 comedians telling their first joke of the year. That's the theory anyway. Mm-hmm. That's the plan. And I went and did that and here's the thing. I got invited to do this show last year. For 2015, you know, the beginning of 2015, first joke of 2015. And I had to cancel it because the club that I work at, Comedy Castle, had Tom Green coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no way that I could be in two places at once. I had to work with Tom Green, so I went with Tom Green. So then this year when I was invited, I said, okay, I have to do it. And then I know, and Corey knows this, because I would say 10 days out, maybe 2 weeks out, I call Corey and go, hey, Corey, I don't want to do this 50 first jokes.
Well,
and
really.
Here's why I didn't want to do it. I thought there'd be a lot of pressure with 50 comics. You know, whenever you get more than like three comics on a bill, it kind of becomes a pissing contest. It kind of becomes a beauty pageant in
the
eyes of the audience.
This is why I stopped doing roasts.
Yeah, absolutely, roasts.
I feel like they're not for the audience; they're for the comics,
right? And contests, and those all sort of feel the same way to me. And I felt like, boy, this is just the giantest comedy contest there could be. 50 fucking guys.
One in about 20 contests has a point behind it. Like,
yeah.
If there's an actual prize that is worth getting.
Well, yeah.
But most contests are a way to fill the room.
Yeah, so I felt like this was kind of a way of, like, you know, I'm there. I have the pressure of having to tell a new joke.
It felt more like a party than
a
comedy show, right?
It was, but I just felt like, to me, I just go, this is not a show that I want to be part of. This is not something that's going to be fun for me. Just from my own personal thing of having to perform with all these people watching me in the audience and a new joke that I've never done. And I didn't want to do it, but I didn't want to cancel because I had canceled the year before. So I call Corey and go, Corey, look, do me a favor. I'm doing 50 first jokes. Corey's not on the bill.
Yeah, I did not do it.
But I say, Corey, here, you want to be part of 50 first jokes? Write my first joke. That was my that's my thing to Corey, suggesting to you.
And I
write my joke.
And I didn't
well,
do
we'll get to that. Because I said, well, here's the thing. If you write my first joke and it's good, then you look good.
Mm-hmm.
If it's bad, then I just look bad. No one knows you wrote it.
Yeah.
And I don't feel so bad because it was your stupid joke, not mine. So I would feel fine bombing with your material,
yeah,
but I didn't want to bomb with my own material. So, you know, I asked Corey to do this and whatever with the new year and stuff. Never heard nothing. And, you know, and I just said, fuck it, I'm going to write my own stuff. And I wrote a couple things, and you know, at a 2-minute limit. And I ended up going and doing it. And I crushed it. I did great. It was, people loved it. I was number 6 of 50, which was probably a good thing in retrospect to be.
You don't
six.
Want to be number 43.
No, you probably don't. So it's no. It was a little bit like, it's like the gangbang. You don't really want to
right,
be.
Right, exactly.
First, maybe not the best spot. Or do you want to go first? I don't know. I wouldn't know about
a gangbang.
I think
in a gangbang, you might want to be first. I think that was probably the safest bet.
First is better than safe. Well, yeah. This was not quite a game.
I don't know. Maybe she gets warmed up by number 7 or 8.
We had a host, Shelly Smith, so I wasn't. And then don't make it. I'm not making any.
Sure.
I'm
not sure making you're not. Any. Of course you aren't.
No, I was number 6. Yeah. So I felt pretty good about that. I go, 6 should be good. They'll be laughing
but
by
see,
then.
But see, that's okay. This is, and then this goes to just my basic belief system in comedy and why I always think a 3-comic show, a 4-comic show is good.
Yeah.
3-comic show is better.
I agree.
A 2-comic show can be okay, but generally 3 is the way to do
three
it.
3 is the best. The crowd is warmed up by the third guy, for sure.
That format works beautifully.
There's a reason that format
there's
is.
There's a format that's been in
and
place.
And that is colloquially, I don't know if that's the right word, but that is credited to Mark Ridley.
Yeah.
Of Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
The 3-comic format.
The 3-comic format.
It's one of those things that's unprovable.
Yeah, it's you can't really prove it. He was the guy that, you know.
Yes.
And in that format, he was the MC, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
Mark was the MC for like the first 10 years.
A decade of that club, yeah. But anyway, so I did this thing.
Which is another reason why
we
love the Comedy Castle.
Yeah.
Because Mark was a comic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I find that I think probably some of the best venues are people that have either been in the business for a long, long time.
Sure.
Or were a comic.
Oh, yeah.
Dangerfields people liked because it was Rodney's Club.
Well,
you know, things like
you
that.
You know, the Comedy Store was Sammy Shore's club.
Right,
you know,
and right,
people
sure.
Knew. So, yeah, but I mean, yeah, obviously, when you have a club owner or a booker who's a comedian, it's usually better than the bookers and the club owners that don't do comedy.
Right.
That generally works better.
Oh, that's controversial. But it's the truth. I mean, it's the thing. Okay, it's the thing for anything.
Yeah.
Generally, the businesses that last for 50 years, and this goes for almost anything, it's generally based on, you know, Thomas Video only closed last year.
Yeah.
But those guys ran it for 30 years successfully, and they were hands-on, and they were, you know what I mean? Like, any of these businesses, if they're involved and they care about what they're doing, it's going to work.
Right. So anyway, so 50 first jokes, back to that. I did this, and it went really well. So I was happy for it. I'm glad I did it in retrospect. I guess my fear should have been, I guess the fact that I wrote a joke that, you know, I'll do the first joke anyway.
All right.
Because you got 2 minutes, so I actually did like 2 bits. But the first one was really a one-liner. And I talked about, and it's a topical joke, which I really can't do from here on out probably, so I can give it away on the show, I think. The rest of it I'll hold on to. But I said, well, you know, it's a new year. I'm trying to be healthy. I drank too much over the holidays. I was drinking that new trendy drink, the hot lead. Have you had the hot lead, Corey? Do you know what the hot lead is?
No, what's the hot lead?
The hot lead is it's coffee with a shot of Flint tap water.
Hey-o!
Ba-dum-bum! Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum.
Hey-o!
Da-da-da-da!
Da-da-da-da-da! You want me on the couch? I get to come over? You're waving me over, Johnny. I can't believe it. No, so I did that joke, and, you know, there was 200 people at the Ark in Ann Arbor, which is a really cool, it's a folk music venue, really. But the way that venue set up, it's really nice. It's like a little, it's not a room any bigger than, say, like a Joey's Comedy Club, but the seating is tiered, you know, it's like stadium style. So there's people like kind of right at your eye line and stuff on your stage. It's really cool. And they laughed great, and they went to the next bit, and the next bit went well, and I sat down and went like, holy shit, I did well. Now, look, I shouldn't be like, I went to a comedy show, I made people laugh, somebody pat me on the back. I've been doing that for 15 years. But in a situation like this,
well, when there's 50 other comics, it does get a little competitive.
Yeah. But I did notice. I did notice this though.
Yeah.
The guys who were there, who are, let's say, more of the working comics or the veteran guys. Mm-hmm. Did better than the new guys.
Well, of course they did.
And I think that's interesting to just look at something like that and go, okay, you strip away my act or somebody's act that it's been developed for all these years, and you just break it down into, let's write something right now and do it. You still get the skill, you know, even though theoretically you've leveled the playing field where the new guy should be just as good as the veteran, it's not the case. And even in a short set, so it's interesting.
It's not,
but it was interesting to see that.
It's not the case.
No, no, no. But you could think that the other way. You could make a logical inference.
We have, because this country is so devoted to sports culture.
Yeah.
Okay, and we think everything is based on, you know, sports is one thing where youth is an advantage. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you're a rookie basketball player and you've got skills, you might be faster and have a touch.
Yeah.
And get around on a guy. But the veteran also might know ways to shut you down.
Yeah, it's just...
comedy, I feel like, not that the old guys, I don't know, it seems like...
But it's... Yeah, go ahead. No, okay, finish
it. I mean, it's not like, you know, 80-year-old guys are going to necessarily, you know, it's not like Freddie Roman is going to come in and destroy a room all the time, but you don't lose anything by being around for a while.
Yeah, and I think it was just on display at the show that there is a subtle, almost undefinable thing about a guy who's... done it for a long time.
Confidence.
And had success. But it's you know, I would say that when you see a guy on stage for 10 minutes, but when you see a guy on stage for a minute or 2 minutes, you think that wouldn't be there, and it still is. And it was very interesting to me to see that, you know, Bill Bouchard there compared to a guy, a noob who, you know, you go, well, Bill Bouchard will kill this guy, you know, in a regular set, and of course he would. But at the same time, it's like, well, now Bill doesn't have his act. You know, it's just interesting, you know.
Well,
it's like, you know.
But the thing is, and they seem to be counterintuitive, but it's confidence, which comes out of not giving a shit.
Well, there's a
does Bill give a shit about that event? And that makes him better because he's died 8 million deaths.
Yeah.
God bless him.
There's an old gambler story that I've heard about. You know, there's all these here are these gambler stories about the guy who said and this comes from Magic, I think, is where I heard it from. But it was
at Texas Guinan's in
1924. There was a guy who you know, the guys like gamblers, you know, they bet on everything.
Yeah.
And a guy went up to, you know, this guy was like a ping pong world champion and said, I'll bet you I can beat you at ping pong.
Okay.
And, you know, this guy was just a gambler, and the ping pong guy's like, fine, I'll bet you whatever you want. I'll kick your ass, and, you know, it's not a problem. I'll beat you in ping pong. He says, okay, so it's got one stipulation. Fine stipulation. And he said, these are the paddles. And he pulled out two frying pans. And he said, okay, this is what we're playing with. And turns out the guy who, you know, the gambler had been practicing for months playing ping pong with frying pans.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the ping pong world champion without a regulation paddle was no good. And the guy beat the ping pong world champion with the frying pan. And that sort of, I don't know if that's true or not. I actually saw a show. There's a show called Hustling America that some guy did. It's on Netflix. And he tried to do that where he said he went to a ping pong club and found a champion. And he had done it practice with Coke bottles for months. And the ping pong champion took the Coke bottle and beat the guy's ass and ping pong with it. So I don't know that it works, but I think the parable there is interesting, though, to go, okay, well, maybe you can, you know, when you take away somebody's tools, and in that case, the comics act being the ping pong paddle.
All right, well, let's put it, how about this? Yeah. How about if we said, all right, we're doing 50 first jokes, and you took somebody out of your comedy class and said, we're going to work on this set for 2 weeks, and we're going to really write these jokes, 50 first jokes, and then you called Bill Bouchard 45 minutes before the show and said, hey, we're doing 50 first jokes.
Yeah.
Who would be better?
Based on what I saw, Bill Bouchard would still be better. But it you know, in a way, it doesn't make sense. It's a weird logic.
It makes complete sense if you've been doing comedy for a long time,
but
you're going to be better.
But the fact that it demonstrated itself, comic after comic, 50 in. How it was. But it was a fun night. And then, of course, some guys, you know, some guys just went up and acted wacky and kind of just said, fuck these jokes. I'm going to just be a goofball.
Well,
and did that. And that works for them.
I'll tell you what. I went to a showcase, the Ray and Laura Comedy Showcase, which is in Hamtramck, in a bar, which is not a traditional comedy venue.
Right.
And I've done the show before, and it's fun. And but everybody had a nice set, but Dave Landau went up and closed and just like destroyed.
There is another level.
Of course Dave destroyed.
You know? But yeah, there's another level. But you know, when I remember being a rookie comic and watching some of these guys and going, you know, these guys aren't that good, but they've had 10 years to write this act.
Yes.
And when I have 10 years to write this act, I'm gonna kill these guys, you know. And I don't know if that ever happened. I don't think I killed those guys, but I think those guys mostly died of lung cancer.
Yes, yes.
So or they drank themselves to death. But it's,
other factors killed those guys.
not me being funnier. But it was a fun show, and it was again, you know, maybe I put more pressure on myself than most people would in a situation like that. Hey, maybe it worked.
I think kind of inversely, it's a problem when you're too good to start.
Yeah.
I think you need to suck when you start.
No, we've seen that. I could give you a list of guys.
Yeah.
Who came out and did like, you know, a comedy class show or an open mic and they fucking lit it up, and then it was all downhill from there.
In the long run, and you know, we talk about comedy because that's what we know, but this probably applies to anything. In the long run, the odds are going to even out.
Yeah.
And they're going to get you.
Well, and
you know what I mean?
Do you want a statistical term?
Yeah.
Regression to the mean.
Sure.
Meaning if you really, really suck, you'll get better. And then if you suck, well, the regression to the mean is when you're beating the odds, when you're better than you're supposed to be, you'll regress to the mean. But the natural inclination, obviously, if somebody works at it, they'll get better. And I think it's true that everybody gets better, right? Know, would you say that every... Okay.
Well,
I know. Well, no. I know. I see names flashing through your head. But everybody everybody really does get better. I'm not saying everybody gets good, but people do get better, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Here's an example of a guy who I saw when he was like 17.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Wenzel.
Yeah, Brad Wenzel.
And Brad Wenzel automatically, immediately had talent and an ability to write a joke when he was 17.
Right.
But he didn't have anything to write about.
Yes.
And so I think Brad stumbled for a couple years.
Oh, he stumbled.
Well,
I had no idea.
No, it's just that I met, you know what I'm saying? Between 17 and 22, Brad did not.
Is he 22 now? I don't know.
I'm not sure how old he is now.
Brad, by the way, he was on this show. He was on our live from O'Mara's last year, 2 years ago now.
But I'm saying Brad is doing great.
Yeah, he is.
He's doing great.
Sure. But Brad was one of the better acts. He was at 51st Jokes, and he had one of the better sets of
the movie. He's going all around the country.
He writes a great joke.
We opened for Brian Posehn, and Posehn's manager immediately like gave him three more dates afterwards. No. And he's doing festivals. Brad's really funny.
No, he is.
I'm just saying he had the natural ability
at
first.
Well,
but
you have to work through.
It did take him a little while.
Everybody is going to stumble at some point. And it's hard to just, you know, be great every night, especially when, you know, you have things against you like venues and lineups and sound systems.
I guess
my
point with Brad was he had the talent from the get-go.
Yeah.
But the talent alone, even in comedy, has to come with repetition.
Has to come with learning
an audience.
Yeah.
Learning how there's a difference between having talent and being funny and knowing what an audience is going to like.
Yeah, that's true.
And reading a room.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've been doing comedy for 106 years
mm-hmm.
and 9 out of 10 times I'm going to do fine. But I did a show a couple months ago that was a bunch of middle-aged black women. it was like a nurse's like fundraiser.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got nothing.
Yeah.
I got no way to dig myself out of this hole. I mean, I did a little bit.
But that's part of getting good at it. And this is...
Well, actually what I did is I stopped doing material and started just like riffing and talking about Empire.
Well, sometimes they want that. Yeah.
And that's what that room wanted.
Well, the one of the tricks about getting better in comedy is that you don't put yourself in those stupid... Which is why 51st Jokes could have been tough. You don't put yourself in situations where you can bomb. You know, you don't put yourself in that's why guys, you know, when you go to an open mic, you go, you never really see the veterans at the open mic. Why is that? Because they know that it's going to suck. They know, I mean, it's not the only reason, but there's a large reason why guys don't go to this.
I have done.
They know that it's going to suck. They don't want to.
The other thing is like, you know, I've done things like I've played, you know, I'll play like a show with Doug Stanhope or somebody. It'll be the greatest thing I ever did in my life, and it'll be wonderful. Or you know, any, you know, you play a big show, and then you go do the open mic the next night, and it's like four drunks.
Yeah,
and it just. There, that's why you don't go do it.
Yeah, that's why.
Because you did all that shit for years.
And one of the secrets I tell my comedy students, I go, you know, when you get to the Comedy Castle and you're working on the weekend, even as the opener, as the MC or whatever, and you're doing 15 minutes, almost anyone can do well there.
Well, let's
I'm not saying it's way easier to play to an 8 o'clock sold out show at the Comedy Castle than it is to 50 people in an open mic.
Yeah.
And some comics look at that and go, well, why don't we just then get up on Saturday night? And I go, because that's not how the business works. Wow. You have to pay your dues.
No, but
you have to know how to, you know, and you have to know how to make.
There's a.
Let me finish. Yeah, but, okay. Let me finish. You have to know how to make. When you know how to make 50 idiots who don't give a fuck about you laugh, or you're at an open mic and you're number 13 of 27 comics and you do well, then it's, you know, it's like batting practice. You take the donuts off the bat. And the next thing you know, you're hitting home runs.
Well, yeah, but that's not entirely true, because I've seen plenty of guys that do really well in an open mic in front of their peers, and then will choke on a dick.
I've seen that too, but I think it's more often the case that...
Or there's guys who will tell you that they're the king of doing a bar show for six people.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to play for six people
in
the middle of Indiana.
Oh.
Like it's... Like you're playing Carnegie Hall.
I never
see those people play Carnegie Hall. You know what I mean? Like,
my brain is racing to the king of playing to six people, Corey. I can't narrow it down at all.
This is when I sometimes get upset with, like...
No, absolutely.
There are bookers and there are other comics, and they'll tell you, well, I did Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the middle of the night during a race riot, and there were eight people, and I had them rolling.
Well,
and I said, well, that's fine, but why don't you play the Laughing Derby in Louisville, Kentucky, or Go Bananas in Cincinnati on a weekend when they're packed house, or Zanies in Chicago? They don't always correlate.
I've seen the king of the road come into the Comedy Castle and not do well.
Sure.
You know, with the regular audience.
There's a lot of those guys.
Yeah, a lot of those guys. But, you know, but there are people, too, that will tell
and
you,
because
know,
those guys have built their shows for those... Road,
yeah, the
one nighters,
and
then they don't know how to work the regular room.
And then
there's the hipster kid who's built his set for the fucking kombucha parlor. You know,
the hookah lounge.
Yeah, the hookah lounge.
There you go.
The hookah lounge comic, the sushi bar comic.
Yeah,
you know, the ice cream parlor comic.
No,
these guys, like, they play whatever, you know, any of these kind of bowling alleys, and they're like, they're really fine tuned. Into that material.
And then they bring that to an audience that just dropped $50 for tickets to get in the door.
Well, yeah.
And is expecting
top-notch
entertainment.
There's guys who are brilliant at a bar in Hamtramck.
Yeah.
And then when they play a show with a sold-out show with a couple hundred people who have mortgages, they can't do it.
They can't do it. No,
so it's being a great comic. But Bill Bouchard, at this point, you put him in any room.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I feel like there's guys... Even guys who aren't famous, who have enough experience, they can do any room.
Yeah, I agree with you. Those road guys. And sometimes I really, and of course, you know, that's why you get hacks.
Of course.
You get hacks because you go to these rooms where originality is shunned and people who sound different and are their own person, you know, are rejected by the audience. And then you get people going, wow. Yeah, I was pulled over on the way here tonight. You know, you people are the worst drivers I've ever seen, and I've driven everywhere.
It's funny you said that, because I was thinking of exactly the same kind of material.
Yeah,
traffic and weather.
Yeah,
it's like an AM radio station. It's like an AM news station. It's like traffic and weather on the 8th. There's guys who just do, you know. Hey, I almost got run over by a snowplow.
Yeah, well, like there's that.
Although, I'll tell you what. It doesn't matter. There's tricks, okay? There's tricks.
Okay,
it's like wrestlers, okay? Yeah. You might be the greatest high spot. You know, you might be doing planches off the top rope and frog splashes. But if you can't execute like an Irish whip, you got a problem. And there's basics. So Dave Attell says to me, you know, a couple weeks ago, he goes, hey, what is the place? Taylor? What is the place?
Yeah.
And he's like, what's the shitty town and what's the shitty town next to that?
Yeah.
And this is like one of the best comics in the world.
Sure, yeah.
He comes to town. He asked me,
local,
you know what I mean? And then I went up
flavor.
And then I saw him go up and drop those two names, you know, or whatever, throws a couple names out and it gets, and I'm like, even Dave Attell's using it.
Yeah, there's those tricks, sure. I think that's fine. But there are guys who, you know, it's all jokes about, you know, their flight out. You know, they flew here and boy, their flight, you know.
God.
All right, let's move on.
Traffic,
I don't
traffic and weather comics.
That is great. I don't want to belabor my, you know, the thing about.
What was it? At least.
Doing 2 minutes.
At least you get to see a bunch of people.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of people.
They should have just called that the comedian, like, holiday party.
Well,
because that's kind of what it is.
It's, what's interesting is this venue, and I actually think, you know, why would you do this at a folk music venue? And I figured out why it works.
Yeah.
Is because the audience is people that, like, they're not comedy fans.
Sure.
They're people who, like, go to this venue for folk music. And those were the people that were in the crowd that night. And it really works because I think if you put that show in a comedy venue, it wouldn't work as well because people are used to seeing really good comedy. And to do an alternative format kind of worked in an alternative venue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, sure.
I know they do 50 First Jokes. It's not an original thing to Detroit, but I know they do it in New York and they do it at different places. But I feel like here, you know, I don't know if you could do that at like a comedy cast. I mean, you could, but I wonder if it doesn't work better at somewhere where it's an event and it's maybe the only comedy show of the year in that venue.
I'm gonna do a show next year called 50 First Strokes.
Oh,
that will be at the Rub and Tug.
What? All right.
And then it'll be at an Asian massage parlor. And we'll just go up and do our shows, and then we'll get a happy ending afterwards.
Well, that would be...
It'll be good times.
Do I have to submit a tape to get on that one? Or how do I get on that?
Yeah, you do.
I do?
I'm going to need... What I'm going to need
a
is...
A dick pic? What do you want?
Well, if you could just send your last three HBO specials.
Oh, well.
And
that's...
have your manager call us, and we'll see if we can get you into 50 First Strokes.
All right, let's get into... let's get into... Oh, boy. Can you... What?
What?
David Bowie died.
Yeah. Did he die at 50 First Jokes?
Yeah.
He went up and was like, let me tell you some stories about touring with Tin Machine. And people just were not into it?
He died, yeah. He died. He died with the old Tin Machine thing.
Yeah.
It was death.
This is my drummer Hunt Sales. Reeves Gabrel. I saw Tin Machine.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I saw Bowie twice. Once was with Tin Machine.
Once was with Tin Machine. Well,
it was great. He came out. Tin Machine was his band in the 90s. He's like, let me form a band.
Yeah.
Let me get away from the Bowie, because he'd done the Glass Spider tour.
Yeah.
He was getting these bigger and bigger spectacle tours.
Well,
so he went back to basics.
Well, didn't he? As far as I remember, he was constantly sort of running from himself, especially like in the late 80s.
Yeah,
where he did like one tour and said, that's it, I'm not doing these songs again. And didn't he sell his publishing on the stock market or something? And he did all this cockamamie stuff with his his catalog. And I think he eventually sort of came back to his catalog, you know, in the last couple tours.
Yes.
But for a while there,
he did a last big, I can't remember which one. It was a Glass Spider or Sound and Vision.
Yeah, well, Sound and Vision was a box set that was sort
of... No, but I mean, he did the
tours. Culmination, yeah. It was a culmination of...
And he kept going, I'm retiring the catalog.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later, he'd come back and do the catalog.
Well, and then he did the thing with Nine Inch Nails and all that when they toured, and I think he played all the old songs on that. But anyway, let's... So David Bowie
passed
away.
But I did see Tin Machine.
Yeah, well, Tin Machine, and there wasn't that... It was Soupy Sales' sons, right?
Yes, it was Hunt and Tony Sales and Reeves Gabrels. Was the lead guitar player.
Well.
And Hunt Sales was the drummer. Actually, the Sales guys were pretty good.
I'm sure they were.
Tin Machine wasn't a bad band.
Well, it's just not.
I'm going to come out. He did it. I remember that Bowie did
Did he do
4 or 5 minute sax solo? And during one of the Tin Machine, like literally.
Did he do any Bowie? Like not even like an encore of you didn't get anything?
I want to say.
Rebel or something? Like that's a pretty straight ahead.
I want to say they did one or two.
They might, yeah.
Well, it was kind of like I saw Mike Nesmith and he did like Papa Jean's Blues.
Yeah.
He did like 3 Monkey songs.
Right.
And then he did all his crap. I was a fan of like the First National Band and some of that stuff, but like. It is a little bit ridiculous if you're like, let's go see David Bowie, and he's going to play all the new hits.
Yeah.
It's
well, but the problem with Tin Machine is they didn't have hits. I mean, no. I think that's the thing.
Tin
like, okay,
Machine, Tin when Machine, McCartney, take you anywhere.
Was that?
It was one of the songs.
Oh God!
But like,
when he did, I could pull up Tin Machine, but we'll let the dead rest for a day. We're gonna play lots of Bowie here in a minute. But you know, when McCartney started touring with Wings, I think it was like Yesterday and Blackbird were like the only Beatles songs he was doing.
Yeah, but Wings had hits.
But that is the difference. Wings had new songs that they could do that people liked.
Band on the Run was a big hit album. And,
so,
whatever.
You couldn't. So he kind of got a pass on that. But there were, there were George Harrison tours where he like didn't play anything.
Right.
You know, he just did.
Well, and you know, ultimately, guess what? And maybe there's when you're David Bowie and you've got this massive catalog and you're always doing new things.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. But this is the reason why Peter Noone's out there singing, I'm into something good. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well,
Eddie Money will play two tickets to paradise
for
you.
Absolutely.
Wherever you go.
Take Me Home Tonight, Shaken. Yeah. They're all night.
He will come to your town and play those two songs till he dies.
Absolutely.
And it's good.
I know I'm forgetting Eddie Money songs too, but those are the big ones. But yeah, I mean, you kind of have to, but Tin Machine played small venues and stuff, right? Did you see them?
I saw them at the State Theater,
Fillmore. Yeah. So yeah, that's where you saw them. Cause yeah, they were, they weren't doing the big houses and you know, Bruce does that. Bruce Springsteen will do that where he did the Seeger Sessions band where he said, I got this, we're going to do this folk music. And he put together 12 folkies to come out with him.
And
he had to play smaller venues because
on a certain level, it was really cool to see Bowie in a smaller venue. And he comes out and he goes, hi, I'm Dave Bowie. this is the band.
Yeah.
And he did that whole thing. And it was kind of ridiculous. But
it's sometimes the humbleness works against him, I think, when guys do that.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, when Bruce did his alternative stuff, I've enjoyed that, listening to some of those. But it's not as good as, it's not as good as the E Street Band. It's not that. So you gotta be careful with some of these guys. Neil Young will do that too.
Right.
Neil Young will do it. Won't he do a show with like, he plays nothing that you've ever heard?
Right. Well, he will. Yeah. And Neil Young has some real, unlike Bowie.
Yeah.
He has some real non-commercial albums.
Yeah, sure.
But when you have a catalog, look, the Rolling Stones are going to play fucking Satisfaction.
Right.
Until the day they die.
I think some Stones fans don't like Stones sets because it's really just the singles.
Right.
And I know on this last one they were doing
Sticky Fingers.
And they do a couple from that were like on the album. And I think they did a tour where they did some Exile on Main Street.
I think they did Exile. They played all of Exile.
Yeah, one night. And
Keith Richards is like, I don't know if I remember them all.
But you know what? That to a casual fan, though, that would not be a great show, I don't think. I mean, not that Exile Main Street's a great album, but there's stuff on there that is not.
No, because they're going to go in and go, why didn't they do Paint It Black?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Where's Under My Thumb or whatever? Yeah. I would go see the shit out of. I like when they do these one album things.
Well, I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen do The River all the way through next week in Chicago. Well, so that's. Well. Now, The River is a pretty commercial record. It's not like Nebraska or something where it would be kind of a bummer to listen to the whole thing in a row. So I think that's good. And it's a double album, so it's 20 songs.
Right.
But yeah, some fans are mad that, Bruce usually does about, between 25 and 30 songs in a, 2.5, 3-hour show.
12.
And he's doing 20, whatever he's doing, 20 songs are from The River. Yeah. And they're in a row and we know the order. So the normal spontaneity that you get at a Bruce show isn't going to be there because, he may only do like another 10 songs after he does the River album. And you kind of know what those 10 songs are going to be, right? They're going to be Badlands.
Well, look,
and they're
going
to be Born to Run and they're going to be Dancing
in the
Dark.
I got
to
say that Springsteen thing is beyond me.
Well, it's beyond you.
Because I don't get why it's like the Dead. Where guys go to every show.
Well, the reason guys go, you answered your own question.
Right.
The reason guys go to every Bruce show is because the sets are completely different. He has a giant catalog and he'll change the set. Like on the last couple of tours, there would be 7 songs the same every night, about approximately between 7 and 10. And then the other 20 could be fucking anything. you know? I mean, Bruce was doing shows, you know, in the last couple of years where he just, you know, he'd play like 5-6 songs, and then he'd go, let's do the whole Born to Run album. And then he'd play that, and then he'd do another 10 songs after that. It's crazy shit.
I
you know, and unannounced. Wouldn't tell people he's going to do the Born to Run album. So it's just, that's why people go to Bruce shows, because they're these, you know, things. And then, like, you know, Bruce will do a thing where he'll just say, hold up a sign, bring a sign, any song you want to hear. And it's not like you have to do a Bruce song. You brought any song from rock and roll, you could bring a sign. He'd grab the sign. He has a guy that has a teleprompter, and he could pull the lyrics up for Bruce. And they do stump the band, and the band would just play, you know, whatever song. And it's kind of amazing. So there's those things that you get in a Bruce show.
For me.
For you. I know
personally
you.
For me.
The guy who went to Tin Machine.
I did go to... I went to Tin Machine. Right. That's true. I did.
I'm not knocking you.
But you know, that was... Look. When the Pixies got back together.
Yes.
I went and saw the Pixies. Pixies played like... back, they would like sell out, and then they'd be like, well, let's add two more shows.
Yeah, I saw
them. So they'd play like three shows in a row.
Yes.
And I went and saw the Pixies. I saw them in Lollapalooza. I saw them play the State Theater. Yeah. I saw them play. They came back and toured, and I saw them probably 3-4 times. Mm-hmm. And it was the same set.
It kind of was, yeah.
And I just went, okay, I'm good.
Like, yeah, I saw the Pixies when they were around in the first go, where they'd put out a new album and they'd play a lot of that.
And weren't really that good live in the 90s.
I thought they were good. They opened for U2. Well, that was at the end when they were. Yeah. When they were,
but then
at the end.
They played at the Royal Oak Theater.
But they did. I mean, I saw them at a bunch of places. The Fox, where they opened for Love and Rockets. I saw them at the Latin Quarter on the Bossa Nova tour. So I saw a bunch of them.
Right.
And they were good. But yeah, it would be a different experience every time
they
went.
I think they were better as a reunion act.
Well, they was tighter. And again, their set list wasn't, hey, here's a new album. It was like, here's all the fucking hits.
Right.
Dig it.
Right.
And that became the prototype for all of these reunion, you know, when the alt bands started getting back together.
I saw Frank Black and the Catholics.
Well.
And they played There Goes My Mind. Where Is My Mind?
They did a couple.
And they did Cactus.
Yeah.
Like, I think they did like three Pixies songs.
Yeah.
And then everybody in the fucking room sang along every word of the Pixie song.
And then he'd do one of his songs.
And then everybody went to the bar for 10 minutes while they played their new song.
Yeah, that becomes the problem. I think when you become a legacy artist, you have a responsibility to give people those songs. And I think that's the way it's moved. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of like guys coming out and just going, I'm not doing any of my stuff.
Fortunately for comedy, you are incentivized to write new material.
You are, yeah.
Unless you're Gallagher. And then you've got to come out there with that hammer.
Gallagher does lots of new lesbian jokes that he got on the internet before he smashes his watermelons.
I know. But if you go to a Gallagher show and he doesn't fucking hammer, you're not, you know what I mean? That's a hell.
That guy is imprisoned in a hell. Listen, I've told the Gallagher story many times on this show.
You've had run-ins with him.
And the guy really does seem tortured and trapped by watermelons and plungers.
It's fucking awful.
And all that. But, you know, it is what it is.
I mean, I have sympathy for Gallagher in that he's in this hell that he can never escape from.
No.
He can't. He wants to come out there and do the roller skates and sit on a big couch and be like, you ever notice that a dog smells the fart before he does it?
He doesn't.
Or whatever he fucking
does. First of all, he doesn't want to travel with the big couch.
Yeah.
So that's out. Okay. No, he wants to Gallagher.
I'm going to do the whole Gallagher story again. Remember, he used to do shit where he'd like do trampolines and
this
stuff.
This is what Gallagher travels with. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, Gallagher brings the mallet.
When he's playing state fairs.
The mallet. No, I'm gonna explain exactly what happens with Gallagher. Listen, I had Gallagher's rider. I know exactly how a Gallagher show comes together. Operation. Here's how a Gallagher show comes together. I know. We're about to eulogize David Bowie, but wait till I tell you what happens at a Gallagher show. Hold on a second. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Gallagher.
How do we get here?
Because you go on your fucking tangents.
We're starting to talk about
David Bowie, and then you want to
end up
at
Gallagher. All right.
Gallagher travels with the mallet, okay? That comes with him.
Yeah, sure.
He flies with that. He brings that on the plane.
But then you've got to go to the grocery store.
Don't jump ahead. Don't jump ahead.
Okay.
Then there's a table.
Yeah.
That the stuff is set on for Gallagher to smash. Now, obviously, you can't just go get a card table or a TV tray for Gallagher to smash his stuff because he'd destroy it with the mallet.
Right.
So Gallagher sends blueprints ahead of time
on how to build the
thing. How to build the thing. And it's a bunch of like 2x4s that are like overlapped. And when he did the Gathering of the Juggalos, one of the crew guys from ICP went in the warehouse and built this fucking thing. And it's incredibly sturdy. It could hold hundreds and hundreds of pounds because it's just a bunch of 2x4s overlapped in, you know, up to a certain height. So it's every so at every show, the promoter has to make him his little table. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have to travel with that because the thing probably weighs 75 pounds anyway when it's all complete.
Right.
So that you have to make. And then Gallagher buys all of the food and everything on the day of the show. He goes to he came in with, you know, a truckload of groceries from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he buys a can opener every time he's out. So he just doesn't travel with the can
opener.
He doesn't
carry a can opener.
Because his can opener broke during his show. And I had to go find a can opener from like a concession guy to open his cans.
Wait, he doesn't carry a can opener?
He doesn't carry a can opener.
You would think that that would be one tool you'd carry.
No, I think he, or the can opener he broke bought. But I was under the assumption that he brought just a can opener from the store and it broke because, you know, those things are pretty cheap anyway. You know, when you have to open 50 cans in a row, you're going to go through some can openers.
I'm going to buy a new can.
But Gallagher. But okay, oh, and now you wonder why.
This
he's,
is a fucking
now you wonder
right.
why. He's, now you wonder why he's
it's
in
a
hell.
Fucking nightmare.
But yeah, right. There's no right. need to wonder why he's in hell. Now you know. Corey, you have to go to Walmart and buy a fucking can opener and 15 cans of cream corn before you can go do your comedy. It's going to drive you fucking insane.
You know, the sad part about living this long is that we remember, you know, and we're not even old.
Yeah.
We're like new young. We're like young old guys. Do you know what I mean? We're like we're like newly minted old guys.
Yeah.
But I remember when Gallagher was a big deal.
Absolutely.
When he wasn't just this like sad, pathetic husk of a man.
Well, yeah. But when, you know, you have to remember when he was selling out theaters, he could probably have a crew that could bring the watermelon remote control blimp and the fucking giant couch and all these things.
The trampoline.
But yeah, the trampoline couch and all those things. Yeah. But, you know, when you're playing a state fair.
He used to do shows on roller skates.
Yeah, he'd be on roller skates. But
now, here's the thing about women. And he'd be roller skating around the fucking stage.
So yeah, you can't. So Gallagher's hit the skids. All right, let's talk about Bowie. Tell
All
us,
right.
You are bigger. And look, I was a David Bowie fan.
Yes.
You're a bigger David Bowie fan than I am.
Yeah, I am. You know, and that's the other thing, too. I remember, you know, the first memories I have of David Bowie was probably what they now call the hetero Bowie phase or straight Bowie.
Late 70s, early 80s Bowie.
Like early 80s.
Let's Dance Bowie.
Because, like, you know, well, you know what? I might have even seen him before. I might have seen, like, Scary Monsters.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, Ashes to Ashes, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just remember him, Bowie, being in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, Let's Dance was a big album.
Sure. Well, that was the MTV era, too. You know, you
right.
had that.
We were just old enough, and you're slightly older than me. We were just old enough that, like, I remember seeing an ad for MTV. We didn't have cable.
Right.
But I remember being at my grandparents' house, and there was, like, the, I want my M, like, it'd be like Cyndi Lauper would be like, I want my MTV! Yeah. And then Bowie was like, I want my MTV.
Right.
And I remember him going, like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then this was the shit that was a big hit. And I had no idea of all the various lives he had before that.
Well, but he became a pioneer in video. That's one of the things about him, that whatever came along, he would try to innovate with, you know, whatever format, whatever, you know, when it was videos, it was this. When it was concept albums, he would make a concept album. He would take different guises. He was experimental. But I think the thing that made Bowie great is that, you know, his music was always, he could make a pop song.
And I'll tell you,
you
what,
you know,
for a long time, I was like, I used to have a running joke that I was like, it's sad that David Bowie died in a car accident in 1979.
Yeah.
Because I thought this album sucked.
Yeah.
And this was a big popular commercial hit. And I'm like, I don't want to hear
China Girl stuff,
and this. And now I sit and I go, oh, wow, this shit's good.
Yeah. This is great. But yeah, I think that the thing about Bowie is that obviously, but some of these guys, you know, some of these guys who are real artsy never get the fan base because the songs aren't that good. You know, like the look is good, the image is great, it's experimental, it's different, it changes. But at the end of the day, the songs aren't good. But the thing about Bowie that separates him from a lot of those guys is that the songs were always great. You know, at least a couple. You know what I mean? Even when
Great. This sounds great to me now.
Yeah, it does.
And I didn't like this for a long time in my life because I was into, you know, Ziggy.
Right.
I got into that stuff.
But even when you hear, like, you know, the Ziggy album, or I don't know, is Heroes an experimental enough album to demonstrate, like, you know?
Yeah.
Where you'd have, you know, you'd have, I don't know, I don't even know this cut because I don't know this record, but just the first cut on this, which is 77, so you've got this kind of krautrock influence stuff going on. And, you know, like, people are like, this is far out, this is crazy. And it is. But you go from something like this. I'll let this play for another second, but. I mean, and this is in the middle of the disco era, you know, he's doing this. And, you know.
Right.
And then you go from that, and then, you know, on the title track, on the same, you know. This sounds great, and this is played on the radio.
But,
and this,
you know,
is
at the time, this sounded crazy.
Yeah,
because all this electronic amplification and all the pedals and the effects.
Yeah, I think this is Brian Eno.
This is his work with Brian Eno. Yeah.
So Tony Visconti was out, and Brian Eno was in.
Yeah, he always went back to work with Tony Visconti. This was part of what they called the Berlin Trilogy.
Yes. But even that had great songs. That's my point, is that Bowie always had great songs. I mean,
well, that's the difference between someone who's good and a legend, an icon.
Yeah.
Bowie has a catalog in which someone could have built a career out of any one of his hits.
Right.
You know, like Heroes is good enough that if anybody else had done that, that would be their one fucking song, and they would have wrote that forever.
But even like this, you know, Ziggy.
Absolutely.
Is a great song.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know, I don't think this was a big radio hit at the time or anything. Maybe in England it was, but you know.
He was huge in it. Ziggy played
guitar. But you listen to this now and it's great. Good,
Between 71 and 73, he put out Hunky Dory, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spider Tomorrow, and Aladdin Sane.
Yeah.
I defy anybody to have three better records in a row. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, the Beatles, obviously, but like.
People have had three great albums in a row. But
those are three of the greatest albums in a row.
It's an amazing era for anyone.
Right.
But, you know, of course, and he got his, you know, very famous as the sort of the, you know, the outer space kind of David Bowie, you know, always.
Well, sure, that was, but it was all cultivated, calculated image.
But even listen to this, which is pretty early. Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low. And but when you listen to Bowie, you hear it's a little bit Beatles.
Yes.
It's a little bit Dylan. It's a little bit of, like, kind of everything that was good, you know? A little bit of, you know, a little T-Rex. It's a little...
He absolutely was a... he was absolutely a synthesizer. And he did use synthesizers, but I mean, he was a synthesizer of all kinds of, which, you know, great. There's two kinds of great artists. There's, like, just crazy original, like Little Richard, just it seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Bowie very calculatedly and very smartly fused all this stuff.
Yeah.
This is on Ziggy Stardust. What he did was theatricality. He had gone to theater school. He went to art school, then theater school. Got into mime and performance, and he always cited like Anthony Newley and like you know what do they call show hall kind of like you know
right.
cabaret,
yeah,
theatrical Broadway kind of stuff, and he fused all of those elements.
And then you get into like the mid 70s, and then you're getting into like something like this, which is completely different.
This is a big switch. It would go out of horns.
Big switch at the time, you know. Yeah. Philly soul,
they called this plastic soul.
Yeah, well,
it was you know
that's
whatever. But
well, that was that. I think that was based on was it Paul McCartney called the Rolling Stones plastic soul? And then that became the title Rubber Soul. And, just behind the bridge,
But this, this sounds, you know what?
Yeah.
This is great,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. But, you know, in the movie 20 Feet from Stardom, if you saw that, Luther Vandross talks about how he came up with the backing vocals for this.
Right.
You know, because he's one of the singers on this and stuff. So. Yeah. And I think, isn't this David Sanborn on sax as well, I think, on this?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. But he could do this too, you know. You can, you know. Great
and then,
song.
And then he went and produced Iggy Pop's records.
Yeah, yeah.
The Idiot.
What's the other thing? You know, his collaborations with guys is pretty legendary too. When you think about him, you know, I'll go to the next thing I had queued up here. But you know, this is him and John Lennon. You know. Now John Lennon's contribution to this wasn't all that much, but you know, still. They went in studio for a day and
it's just immortal.
Yeah.
It's just the beat is there. Yeah. It's got that groove.
Yeah, there was something there. It wasn't just lyrics, it was everything, you know. I guess we're not gonna hear John Lennon sing because it's 3 minutes into the I didn't get the radio edit of this, apparently. Because the aim is John. I can't do it. That's John.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
Well, John was busy farting around on other people's records at the time.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, look at all the collaborations. Here's another, I mean... first of all, how legendary is this just in its own, you know?
Wasn't this around the same time that Lennon did, like, Help Whatever Gets You Through the Night?
Yeah, probably. Sure, yeah.
Same, roughly same era.
I don't know. Mid-70s. Fame was 75 or 74?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is like, everybody likes this. You know what I mean? Like, this is not even, you have to be a Bowie fan to, like, Under Pressure. So there he is with Queen. You know, they never sang this live. Did you know that? Like,
yeah.
Like, Queen would do it.
Like, Live Aid or something?
Well, no, because he was, at Live Aid, Bowie did Dancing in, well, it's not going to play. Was Dancing in the Streets. That was his contribution.
I'm going to do some low lights.
But yeah, Queen would do it with, like, Roger Taylor as the, or with the one, the drummer would sing Bowie's part. And then Bowie would do it at the Freddie Mercury tribute show. He did it with Annie Lennox. So it was like Queen with Annie Lennox and David Bowie. But yeah, they never did this as Freddie Mercury and David Bowie. Never did this live together. It's too bad. Trivia.
It almost sounds like a live.
I looked it up.
It almost sounds like a live recording.
Well, they were in the studio together. Speaking of Dancing in the Streets.
Well,
I know.
Low light.
But this was a big deal at the time because it was like, can you imagine if Mick Jagger and David Bowie got together? What would they do? This is what they did. So this was not, you know. Oh. Sounds bad even. Boy, just that beat is
bad.
You know,
we were just talking about how, like, Fame sounds timeless. And, like, Let's Dance sounds good.
Yeah.
This sounds horrible.
This sounds dated and awful.
Awful.
The production sounds
this
awful.
This is like if someone, like, if you jerked off the whole 80s into one load. That's what this is.
Yeah. Yeah, this is terrible. And then, you know, let's go into 90s Bowie.
The video for this, by the way.
Oh, good God.
Is the single worst thing that ever happened to humankind, to homosexuality, to heterosexuality.
No, that is real bad.
Him
if you want
Bowie and Jagger dancing around.
Well, Jagger in the 80s was kind of notoriously bad, right? I mean, Jagger.
Pretty awful.
And here's a Trent Reznor. I'm Afraid of Americans.
Got in on the industrial scene.
Did you see this tour? Is that one of the ones you saw? Or no?
No, I didn't see this. Because
that was, I think, his last big tour, as far as I can remember. Right?
Yeah, it was earlier than that.
Because this, I think, is 94, 95? I'm afraid
of America. 97.
97? Yeah, okay, that low. No, you're right, 97. I can't help it. But this is great too. This is a hit.
Yeah. I'm afraid
of Americans. Very good stuff. And should we play any old Bowie one here? So I was gonna play his new record.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna look up Liza Jane.
Yeah, I don't have it. I already know. Well, I can get it on YouTube. You want me to do that?
Funny. How good is this? How good is this song?
Yeah, I know.
It's
what, like, I mean.
You know, and I didn't always follow Bowie on all his little later stylistic trips.
Yeah.
The last couple records.
Before we hear Liza Jane, let's get this. This is one of the last times I remember seeing Bowie do anything live. Do you remember this? It was like some fashion rocks or something.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Arcade Fire with Bowie. Great too.
I don't think he'd been on stage since like 2006. I think that was probably a lot of time.
Yeah, and this is on YouTube. So if you want to see this on YouTube, you can go watch this. It's a really good song. I mean, this is from the first Arcade Fire album. You know, Bowie obviously found a kinship with those guys. Yeah, I'm watching him. It's so sad. And he looks good, you know. I mean, he would have been 60 about when he did this.
The amazing trick of David Bowie is that he looked about 35 for about 30 years.
Yeah. All right, here's your Liza Jane.
This is from like 1960.
Davy Jones and the King Bees.
Yep. Right? I mean, it's like his first single.
Yeah, right.
And it sounds like all the stuff at the time. What kind of girl?
This wasn't a hit, right?
No.
Well, you know, that probably helped him, you know. Had he had hits with this, he probably would have kept chasing this sound,
right.
But the fact that this was kind of rejected probably made him innovate.
But this
you know?
Is good.
Yeah, this is good. It's fine. But it also sounds that you could find, you know.
Right, there was a million
50
of
things that sound like this. Yeah, this is cool.
Isn't that cool?
I never heard that before.
It's really cool to hear his early stuff. I have a whole album of this, like 64 to 66 stuff. Well, because, yes, he was with David Jones is his name. David Robert Jones is his real name. And he had a couple different bands.
Yeah.
There was Davy Jones and the Mannish Boys.
Okay.
And then there was Davy Jones in the Lower Third.
Yeah.
And then Davy Jones from the Monkees got famous.
Oh, okay. So
then he had to change it to Bowie.
To be dubbed David Bowie. Interesting.
Which he named after the Bowie knife. Jim, what was it? The Bowie, the Frontiersman.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, this was his album that he released on his birthday, 3 days before he died.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the first line is just, you know, you listen to the lyrics of this, and you just fuck. He was really, you know, it was really a message, wasn't it? You know. And if you see the video's
creepy,
completely amazing.
Shit.
Yeah. Now, apparently he did that video back in, like, you know, last year sometime. But he knew, he must have known it was coming. You know?
Well, he'd been sick for 18 months. Didn't tell, and then no one seemed to know. Look up here, I'm
in heaven. That's a tough line. I've got scars that can't be seen. Yeah. That's tough. Bro. I've got drama. Good song though. Can't be stolen.
Yeah. Always had it. I mean,
knows me now.
In terms of I'm not gonna say I liked everything Bowie ever did.
No, it's too clearly, there's too much to
really
like.
That
yeah.
dancing in the streets is a horrible
piece
of
awful,
shit.
Yeah, that's awful, yeah.
But and he had lots of lulls, but that's what happens when you experiment.
Well, yeah, and any guy, you know, and Dylan's the same way. You can't like everything Dylan ever did. It's just too much. It's, you know, I don't think you can like everything Neil Young. I don't like everything Bruce Springsteen ever did.
But
I don't like McCartney ever did.
Well,
but,
okay, those are two guys with glory eras.
Yes, yeah.
In that you look at, like I said, that 71 to 73 or 75, whatever. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Same thing with Dylan. You look from like when he went electric to like 70 whenever he left.
Yeah.
You got the motorcycle crash. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff. And then there's shit that doesn't work.
No.
And then 30 years later, Dylan comes out with great albums.
Yeah, right.
So Bowie could do that too.
And then this is a song. This is the last song on the new album. It's called I Can't Give Everything Away. Boy, talk about sending a message. Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, poor guy. But he knew what he was doing, you know. He was an artist to the end, you know. He knew the image he wanted to put out there, and he did it.
I knew something's very wrong. The pulse returns for prodigal sons. With blackouts, hearts.
Yeah, I mean, you can listen to it later here. And I like that Bowie, you know, Bowie.
And the voice, I mean, he just had that great voice.
Yeah, that voice is so unique, yeah.
I can't give everything.
I mean, we didn't even talk about him singing with Bing Crosby. And
oh, God.
I mean, that was incredible at the time, yeah.
That's my favorite Christmas song.
Well, then there's something like this. Now, this is Mott the Hoople.
Right, right.
But this was a Bowie song that, right, you know, went on to be a big hit without him doing
it. Yeah, he wrote songs for other people.
Yeah, and this is fucking great, you know?
But then it rapped all night about his suicide. I'd kick it in the head when he was 25. Speed jive, don't want to stay alive. When
you're and you can hear him doing, you can hear Ian Hunter doing the Bowie voice too, you know? I have the Bowie version. Do you want to hear the Bowie version of this? Or, I mean,
yeah, it can't be much different.
It's a little different, you know? It's a little different. Which I think Bowie's collaborators, you know, Mick Ronson on guitar, great, you know? Peter Frampton on guitar, stuff, great, you know? A little more anthemic in the hands of Mott the Hoople, but it's all there, though, you know.
Yeah, right.
Love it. But I could listen to either of these versions.
No, they're both fantastic.
Yeah, Mott the Hoople made it a little bigger, you know. But
it could have easily been a hit for him.
So yeah.
Well, it's like
you know, it's like here's a song you didn't think much of, and it became an all-time anthem for somebody else. You know, and that.
Well, I think that's when you know. I think that's when you know someone's a genius.
Well, Dylan, you know, look at Dylan,
Beatles,
you know, all that stuff,
right?
And. You know, even Bruce's stuff that he's given away, you know, Blinded by the Light and stuff like that, that, you know, other people have covered of his.
How many songs did Badfinger had a whole career because Paul McCartney threw songs to him?
Well, but a lot of the Badfinger stuff they wrote, I mean, some of it.
Yeah,
you know,
but, you know.
But, yeah, they got stuff from different people.
Peter and Gordon got songs that Paul and John threw away.
That's great. I mean, listen to this. There's another example. Everyone knows this, right? Nirvana. And this was not like a huge Bowie song when Nirvana did it. You know, it was a Bowie song. It wasn't like, you know, one of his top hits or anything.
We passed upon the stairs. We spoke and walked.
It's interesting to listen to this album because Kurt's mic is too hot. The guitar is feeding back. It's really a pretty raw thing, you know. I think if they would have done this later, they would have gone in the studio and fixed it.
Yeah, maybe you not. Know? Maybe not with those guys.
Yeah, I don't know.
They,
it's
they,
weird.
They
you know?
Like to have that.
It was posthumous. Stuff,
they
like
to have that Butch Vig production.
No, but it was dead too. So you know. but that's good. And here's the Bowie.
Well, didn't they do that? No, they did that live on Unplugged.
Yeah, they did. Well, yeah, that was Unplugged. I'm saying it was on TV, but when the album came out, a lot of guys would go in and, you know,
remix.
They'd dub it in, you know.
We passed up on the stairs.
Well, that's got a lot of processing.
This is a different mix of it. You know?
It might be a
because that's when I was going through his catalog too. A lot of the reissues have different edits, and the edit of which one was it? There's a Young Americans radio edit. Don't even listen to that fucking thing. It's in the middle of the song. It just it's like wow, hurt your ears.
What do they cut off the song?
They cut. I don't know. It's just not good.
I think that's a different mix. That's a weird one.
Yeah, it's a different mix, probably.
But here's the
world.
All right, you know, I was.
It's the 2015 remastered version. I don't know. That's the problem when you have a streaming service. and you know, some of the. I probably made this complaint before on the show. Some of these, like, one hit wonder guys re recorded their hit.
No, right.
And it ends up on the streaming service, and you can't find the original.
Right, right.
And it drives you fucking crazy. Because, and sometimes it's, you know. You have to dig
for... No, but you want the original track.
Right, but you dig for some of this stuff like, I don't know, should I go crazy and just start playing random shit?
But then there's like, okay, like, there's the Beach Boys did, there's a Help Me Rhonda album version, and then there's what you think is Help Me Rhonda, which is the single. And if you hear the album version, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It just throws you for a complete loop.
So I heard this song on the radio.
Yeah.
The other night, and I hadn't heard it in a long time, and I remember it from being a kid and stuff. Do you know who this is? A guy named John Stewart, not the guy from Daily Show. But and I heard this song on the radio, and I went, "Wow, this is great! I need to add this. You know, I want to listen to this later." So I found this version. And I go, "Something's off," and of course, it's a completely different recorded version of the song. I'll get you the real one. But now I have to go to YouTube. Do you know this song? No, not really. Yeah, it's this guy. He's a singer, but... Now, and the other thing interesting is the original is Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. You know, Lindsey playing the guitar and Stevie Nicks is doing the backing. But I'm like, this thing sucks. Why can't I get the real one? But it's just not available on the fucking streaming service.
Yeah, my buddy Jim Bass,
here's the actual song. Sounds better already, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is the shitty YouTube version. This is, you know, the goddamn streaming services. They gotta make that. They gotta let people know that. You know.
When the lights go down in the
now we're rocking.
Yeah, it makes it
it's a lot better. Wait till your Stevie sing. It's like an angel. This fucking get fucking back whoever hack they go into the studio for an afternoon. And there's Stevie. Anyway, that's enough of that. All right.
Well, there's another one of our patented musical episodes where people go, oh, geez.
No, I think people like hearing music, and why not? Do you want to hear David Bowie's first debut album as David Bowie?
What, Space Oddity?
No, it's just called David Bowie. It's from 1967.
Oh, yeah.
There's the cover.
Right, right.
You probably never listen to this.
No, I know what that is.
Which one do you want to hear?
We
Are Hungry Men. There is a Happy Land.
These are not good.
Rubber Band. Sell Me a Coat. Uncle Arthur. Come and Buy My Toys. She's Got Medals. Maid of Bond Street. Which one? Care.
Just fire them up because these are more show tuney kind of thing.
Are they? I've never heard these. Let's listen to Love You Till Tuesday.
That one's not bad.
This one, I've heard of this, right?
Just look through your window. Look who's
fucking awful.
Outside.
Well, the voice is there, you know?
Little me is waiting.
Yeah, this does sound like a bad,
standing,
you know,
through the
60s
night.
Pop song that someone does.
When you walk out through your door, I'll wave my flag and shout.
This sounds like Anthony Newley.
Yeah.
Is the news. According to the latest world population survey, figures have reached danger point, my God.
The fuck is this?
15 million, 75,000. New York, 80 million.
I mean, 67, people were getting kind of crazy with the concept album.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like that Tiny Tim album. Studies include exophagy. I formed my own society. It's interesting. I don't love this, but...
But see, how different is this?
Yeah.
This is 3 years after Liza Jane,
yeah, right.
Which was like that blues, you know...
I'm smiling.
Straight British blues thing. So who will buy a drink for me, your messiah?
We are not your friends. We don't give a damn. Unless you're joining the gang. Let's hear what this sounds like.
Let me introduce you to the gang. Johnny plays the sitar. He's an existentialist.
All right, Dave. Rock it, baby.
He had that great now beat, and then they go, nope, let's go away from that.
Well, again, it's, so good now that it's taking the sounds that the Beatles and the Stones Molly were, is the model, you know, in the Kinks and some of those bands, and it's just kind of,
yeah. Very,
it's ripping all that
the
off.
The Kinks is probably a little bit more, but, although, don't do that to the Kinks. Wrong. That's interesting.
Cause she can't switch off now that she's joined the gang. Arthur is a singer with a band.
Well, this is like,
it's interesting, yeah.
It's British music hall.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a totally different style.
Yeah, that's good. I like Bowie, man. Bowie, that's sad. Well, what were his movies? Can you pull up his IMDb and talk?
Yeah.
Labyrinth, everyone knows, because
sure.
That was big when we were kids.
Bowie had a real interesting sporadic kind of film.
The Man
career.
Who Fell to Earth, which was Nicholas Roeg's movie, which was an interesting... Kind of an art house
sci-fi.
It's
a very weird movie. It's a hard watch.
Yeah.
They're actually doing, the Redford Theater's doing Labyrinth and The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah.
And those could not be more different.
Wasn't he a vampire in something? Was that The Hunger? Was that any good?
The Hunger's great.
I've seen some of these Bowie movies, but not recently.
The Hunger is like, it's the greatest single mainstream lesbian scene.
Oh, okay.
It's Catherine.
I've probably seen it.
It's Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, I think I have seen
going
that.
Going at it.
I've seen that
the
scene.
The Hunger's
anyway.
Really cool.
Wasn't there Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, where he played T.S. Lawrence?
Yes,
from Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, yeah. He was great in The Prestige as Nikolai Tesla.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's one of my favorite movies. Yeah I love The Prestige. Yeah. He's great in that. He doesn't have a huge role in that or anything,
no,
but he comes on and he's...
He did a lot of...
He played Warhol. What did he play?
Basquiat.
Warhol? In Basquiat, yeah, because they did that with Bowie. They'd make him play Tesla and Warhol in some of these vagabond kind of...
kind of good at
it. Yeah, it was good. He was.
Yeah, I think he just would kind of do movies as a lark, and I think if he'd really kind of put it more effort into it, he probably could have had a couple more... Really good signature.
Well,
roles.
I think the problem when you're a guy who, you know, writes albums and tours is those movies are like 2 years out of your life, three years out of your life. You know, by the time you get the money for them and stuff, it's just like, fuck, I could make an album and do a tour and have $10 million in the bank.
Oh, do you have that? We should get the clip from Extras. That was great.
Oh, Extras? I can try to find that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I remember Extras.
Oh, yeah, he was Pontius Pilate in The Last Temptation of Christ.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great... that's a movie that's a shame that no one sees that. Even though, you know, Christ movies are boring, that's a fucking good movie. And it's a shame that happened to Scorsese with that because, you know...
Yeah.
That's a real good... you know, even if you're not into the whole Jesus story, that's the Jesus movie for you.
It's the Jesus movie for people who hate Jesus.
I mean...
What are you doing
today? VIP area.
Well, can we come in? Because we're getting no action.
Not made of money.
Stephen Merchant's trying to get in the VIP area.
It's the same seat. It's actually the same seat for 60 quid.
You paid 60 quid to go in here? You should let me negotiate.
So shit, mate.
And they can still see me. There should be an actual barrier.
Because Ricky's on a series. Ricky gets to sit in the VIP.
It's a VIP, but it's literally sitting it's on the same bench.
It's the same couch with like a rope separating the VIP from the non-VIP.
Let's go sit next to David Bowie. He's not getting any hassle.
Bowie's in VIP.
I'm just going to speak to him.
I don't know what you're doing.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Mr. Bowie, can I just say that we are both very big fans.
I can't hear you, love. Come over here.
So he's raving them over. Ricky and his co-star.
Hi.
We were just saying that I'm an entertainer too.
Oh, yeah?
Ashley Jones.
What are you doing?
I'm in a sitcom.
It's called When the Whistle Blows. Mm. Have you seen it?
I haven't, no. Is it any good?
No, it's shit.
Oh, just riffraff everywhere.
Not going down too well, huh?
It's getting 6 million viewers. So, I mean, it's not exactly how I meant it to be, because the BBC have interfered and sort of chased ratings and made it lowest common denominator sort of comedy, sort of catchphrases and wigs, and I think I've sold out, to be honest, but
yeah,
it's difficult, isn't it, when to keep your integrity when you're going for that first
little fat man who sold his soul, the little fat man who sold his dream, chubby little loser. Chubby little loser.
That's great.
National joke. No, not chubby little loser.
Of course, no. the whole club is now stopping to watch Bowie play the piano.
No one's bloody laughing. The clown that no one laughs at. They all just wish he'd
die. I forgot how good this is. This is great.
He's so depressed at being
useless.
It's a
good series,
Extras.
Extras was good.
The fat man takes his own life. No.
Better than
so
people
depressed
do credit.
And yeah. Being hated. Fatty takes his own life. Fatso.
I like Fatso.
Yeah, let's go with Fatso. Fatso takes his own life. He blows his bloated face off. No. He blows his stupid brains out.
But the twat I'd probably miss.
Yes, Linda, I like that.
Yeah, so do I. It's brilliant, Linda.
He sold his soul for a shard of fame. Catchphrase and wig and the jokes are lame. He's got no style, he's got no grace. He's banal and facile, he's a fat waste of space. Yeah, everybody sing that last line. 1, 2, 3. He's banal and facile, he's a fat waste of space. See his pop, no space. Pop, pop, pop. But again, see his pop nose face. Yeah, pop, 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 pop. Again, see his pop nose face. Pop, 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 pop. The little fat man with the pop nose face. Pop, pop.
It's great. It's so funny. It's a great tune.
Yeah, I mean, and it's
and,
like
and
it's
you know,
like,
you know, he just went in there and ripped. Sound,
yeah, like
he just ripped that off.
This sounds like a Bowie song.
Ripped that
yeah,
right out. Crazy. He just sat down at the piano and cranked that out.
Now Bowie famously might have, you know, his wife Angie used to run around and talk about how she caught him in bed with Mick Jagger and all that stuff. And I don't know what.
Well, Angie would.
She was a nut.
They were yes.
Still a nut.
Angie was his first wife, and she was very involved in his career, and she would go out and recruit girls and bring them back.
Yeah, they had
a mansion called Hempstead Heath, and
Hempstead Heath is a place.
Not Hempstead Heath. What was their call? Yeah. Anyway,
they had a name. Yeah, those English
they
estates
had a little
have
house.
Names, yeah.
It wasn't even a, but they had a little sex lounge that they'd bring people into and. In terms of the gender bending and the sexuality and the fluidity and all that kind of stuff, Bowie obviously made that because at the height of his success, when he was a mega selling artist, when he was the biggest thing in the world in like 72 and he was doing Ziggy Stardust and he was gender bending and all and dressing in gowns and stuff. That was wild stuff.
Yeah, he was very influential on all of
wild.
On, you know, from glam to punk to. You know, cross-dressers, I remember hearing an interview with Boy George, I think it was on Howard Stern, where Boy George said, that was what I did. You know, that was, Bowie was the reason I got into music, because I've never seen anybody, you know, be this sort of gay, flaming kind of cross-dressing thing.
I mean, Elton John was also doing the his
Yeah, but it was also, Elton John sort of did it as a, it was not the same. Elton John never felt real. Elton John always felt like a gimmick to me.
Right. Bowie had an edge. Like
Bowie always felt like, you know.
The guy had a cutting edge.
Here's a real weirdo. You know, here's a real eccentric. So.
That's pretty amazing, though, to keep a cutting edge for 40 years.
Yeah.
And anytime some new Bowie. I mean, he had periods, like I said, in the 80s where he got a little pudgy. Not even pudgy, but like softer.
Yeah.
But boy, a true icon, a real original.
Yeah, goodbye, Bowie.
And that's the thing about Bowie, though. I was so sad, but I spent that whole day, like I think a lot of people did, just listening to Bowie stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? I felt better.
Yeah.
I felt better.
Well, I mean, I think I heard the news. It was 2:00. It was after the Golden Globes.
It was like late in the
night. And I was watching the Golden Globes. We're going to talk about the Golden Globes. And we're just taking a transition from Ricky Gervais to the Globes.
Right.
It was about 2:00 when I saw the news of Bowie. I was reading Golden Globes coverage, and it was like, oh, Bowie's dead. And it's like, oh, fuck, man.
Well, I kind of saw it at night, and I went, oh, maybe this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And then woke up and went, nope, that's not bullshit.
Yeah,
but farewell, Bowie, and thank you so much.
Let's do a little Golden Globes, and then we got to get out of here because I got to go. Ricky Gervais, we're going to do it. By the way, next week is Movie Mania, or the next show will be Movie Mania.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because they're going to do the Oscar noms are going to come out this week, and then my plan is to try to see everything. I've seen almost everything. So we're going to review everything next week. So we're not going to talk about
gets nominated before you waste your time on Carol.
The big winners, really, in almost any category they were nominated in was either The Revenant or The Martian. And I think those are almost certainly going to be the big winners, the nominations anyway. Ricky Gervais was funny. I thought the show had weird, like, a lot of, like, swearing that was bleeped out of the American broadcast, and I'm like, why the fuck do they even
the fourth time? Well, first of all, why is it on network?
Well,
if they just would throw that on, you know, insert name of cable channel,
yeah,
AMC or whatever.
Well, Bravo's NBC, so
Bravo.
NBC could conceivably go, you can watch it on Bravo with
uncensored
or
yeah,
watch
that's what
it on
they
NBC
really should have done.
Or show it later or something. I don't know, but it's really annoying.
You know what? That's actually an elegant solution that they should do from now on.
Yeah.
If you have a cable channel, just throw it on the cable channel and uncensor it.
Right. Or MSNBC or something, you know. But I think part of that is that they don't want to split the audience for ratings purposes because they're charging a lot for these commercials and stuff. So it's kind of annoying. But Ricky was real funny, I thought.
The Golden Globes are notorious for being the drunken.
Yeah.
The Oscars are all uptight and serious and formal, and the Golden Globes is more like people kind of hanging around having a party.
But I also, but I felt it was too
loose.
There were things that were just like, well, we can't even fucking hear what you're saying. You know, Jonah Hill and these people.
That
it's like,
was
we
horrible.
Can't even hear what you're saying.
Well, okay. So Ricky Gervais was actually funny.
Yeah.
He didn't do a whole lot of bits.
No.
He came out, did 3 minutes at the front.
Yeah. Probably more than that.
Five.
It was good, though. It was funny.
His bit about NBC not having any nominations.
Yeah, that was great.
Was hilarious.
And by the way, if you're offended by his Caitlyn Jenner jokes or his Orange is the New Black jokes, go fuck yourself.
Uh-huh.
Seriously, just go fuck yourself. Because he told those jokes, and the joke was about, Bruce Jenner, sets a bad example for women drivers, essentially. I know I'm not doing it justice, but but it's like, that's not a joke about...
He said, he's done so, Caitlin's done so much for transgender people.
Yeah.
Not much for women drivers.
Women drivers, yeah.
That's it. That was the
That's a great joke, but that's a joke about women drivers. That's not a joke about, and you can be mad that it's a stereotype about women drivers, but people took
but
it as like,
the fucking
he's
joke.
Anti-transgender, but it's like, no.
No, but there's
people
a whole.
People don't get that at all.
There's a whole community of nitwits.
Apparently, who's the Laverne Cox?
Yeah.
Apparently told him off backstage. That's the rumor.
By the way, speaking of Laverne Cox.
Yes.
Cox.
Yeah.
There is a they're making a remake of the fucking little of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
Okay, with Laverne Cox.
Which no one will watch.
Okay.
I predict right now.
All right. There's no reason to ever remake the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Not at all.
Tim Curry owns that fucking part.
Absolutely.
Like, you can't, no one will ever be better than Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Like, nobody owned a part more than that.
Yeah.
And Tim Curry, not actually a transgender individual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's got an edge to it, just like the Bowie thing.
It's
because Bowie might have been the only guy that was like, I'm going to blow guys to get more pussy. I don't know.
Well,
it was an amazing strategy.
When you do something so well that you transcend your actual gender to do it, that means you're just that much more talented. And you can't go, when a fat guy, when Robert De Niro would gain weight to play a role and people would go, that's amazing, because he's not a fat guy, but look how fat he got himself.
Right.
That's amazing. A fat guy being a fat guy is a little less amazing.
True.
So
when Al Jolson would actually literally become a black man, to sing Mammy. Oh, wait.
No, yeah, that's not exactly.
No, I'm kidding.
Going, but yeah, it's
I'm saying that the Bowie stuff had an impact because, you know what? You're right. Why are they? It's not going to be good with one. First of all, Laverne Cox couldn't hold fucking Tim Curry's balls.
No.
And get out of here with that. And, yeah. And this celebratory culture of like everything, we got to go yay, yay, yippee. It's taking the fucking joy out of everything.
Well, it makes people feel good when they announce the thing. Yes. And it's a great story for everyone to talk about, but no one's going to see that. I can guarantee that. All right, so my other thoughts on the Oscars or on the Golden Globes.
Uh-huh.
You know, Amy Schumer said, people call me cunt or something. That was her line.
They bleep her out.
And they bleep that out. And Amy Schumer, the 15 minutes are ticking fast. And I don't dislike Amy Schumer at all. I thought Trainwreck was good. I've seen her do stand-up, and that was pretty good. But boy, she's got to come up with a new act or something.
Well,
because it's getting old.
Amy's acting like she's a beloved icon.
Yeah, it's not.
And
she ain't.
She's not.
She ain't. She ain't.
She's not. She's walking out there like she's Joan Rivers.
Right.
And guess what? Joan earned that shit, honey.
Yeah. And Joan, you know what I mean? Joan worked a long
Joan
time.
Joan put down fucking
Joan was,
40 years of work.
Joan went on the fucking TV Guide channel. You want to do that,
exactly.
Amy? You want to be A-list. And don't act like you're fucking D-list if you want to be A-list.
For Christ's sake.
If you want to be D-list,
for Christ's
sake, D-list.
I opened for Amy Schumer 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. A terrible.
A horrible
comic. You
want to
go back? Listen,
like
Amy, look at the man in front of me. You want more of him?
You
want to sit in a fucking a 5x5 dressing room with this fat fuck like I do every week? No!
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 You're going to be me, Amy Schumer. That's the risk you're running. You're hanging out with Jennifer Lawrence.
Barely 36
Enjoy
months
it.
Ago,
yes.
Amy Schumer was sitting on a couch with me showing clips on her phone. She was like, look at this on YouTube. She was sitting next to me on a couch.
Amy,
That's you could be back there any minute, honey bear.
There you go.
All right.
Amy Schumer. I was Amy Schumer 36 months ago.
Yeah, you haven't gotten anywhere.
Nowhere.
She's got to the top of show
business.
She's
gotten to the top.
She's hanging out with Jennifer Lawrence.
If you want to stay
Vegas.
There, don't say cunt on the Golden Globes. Don't run around with Jennifer Lawrence like you're the cool, because that's the other thing. Don't talk about how you're a big nerd and everyone hates you, and then run around with Jennifer Lawrence like you're the mean girls at the fucking prom.
Don't worry.
And that
currently Amy Schumer is being made fun of on Fashion Police.
Yes,
but in 2 years she'll be hosting Fashion Police.
She very well maybe.
So by the way,
I hope she doesn't.
Margaret Cho is on there now, and I'm like,
wow,
don't give
one.
That up, Margaret.
Look,
I'm just
Amy, I'm gonna give you. I'm gonna here you go. I'm not gonna give it out over the air.
Uh-huh.
But Amy, you call me. I got Janine Garofalo's number. You call her, find out how she's doing.
Well, you know, Janine, there's another one who had
Janine Garofalo over time had a bigger movie career than Amy Schumer's had up to this point.
Look.
So, if
I
you
dated
want
a,
to
I dated a girl who I loved very much, but she made me watch The Truth About Cats and Dogs. And then she made me watch the one where she goes. There was one where she went to Ireland.
Yes, I know the
there
movie,
was like
yes.
a little. There was a brief.
I've heard.
Living long
she
enough.
She was hot. Yeah, she was a
there
hot
was a
star.
Period of time when Janine Garofalo was the star of romantic comedy.
She was the anti-star that every woman could relate
which
to.
Which is kind of what Amy Schumer
and Amy
trying
Schumer's
to do.
Doing that exact bit. So I'm saying it's the exact same bit. It's the exact same bit.
Right.
And it's not a knock on Amy Schumer. I think she's funny. But God damn it, you gotta either. If you want to be the outsider, you got to go away and be the outsider.
Well, I think,
and you want to poke, you know, you want to poke fun Hollywood. You got to go away.
I think this is perfectly tying up what we said earlier. And obviously, Amy Schumer's got a good 10, 12 years in comedy of working hard. But you know what? She's getting a little ahead of what she is.
Yeah,
it's like I was saying with like Brad Wenzel. When he was 17, he wasn't ready to conquer the world. Now he is.
Well, she's
seasoning.
I can see. Look, I'm a comic, and I think Amy Schumer's good, and I'm getting tired of her shit.
Exactly.
So if you're a housewife sitting at home, you're probably really not liking Amy Schumer.
It's fucking hard.
And even like a Kristen Wiig.
That's why we're sitting here celebrating Bowie for an hour.
Yeah.
Because that guy had a 40-year career, and he always surprised
you.
Well,
it was never predictable.
Was always amazing.
And you know, Kristen Wiig was the star of the universe with Bridesmaids, and she's cooled off. And like, you know, she's going to do Ghostbusters, and that'll probably
and
be
you know
pretty
what?
Good.
I liked her. She's done some indie movies.
Yeah. But
and I liked Welcome to Me.
Yeah.
And she was in The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which nobody on earth saw.
Okay.
Which was good.
Yeah.
But she's
it's fine, and nothing against Kristen Wiig, but Amy Schumer doesn't want that career either. You know, she wants
it
to be
is really hard.
She
to,
wants to be this A-list. You know, she wants to be the female Sandler or the female Jim Carrey or something. And You know,
speaking of Jim Carrey, notice how everybody shit their pants when Jim Carrey came out to the Golden Globes.
Yeah,
and he did 5 minutes of just riffing,
was funny.
And everybody loved his shit.
Yeah, it was good.
He didn't even do 5 minutes. He did like 2 minutes.
Yeah, he is kind of.
Channing Tatum went up there and acted like people thought he was funny.
Channing Tatum is great when there's an editor, when they're shooting it a year in advance, and when you know what I mean. Like some guys can work in film.
Look,
because it's
the
it's
funniest
so controlled.
Thing. The funniest thing to ever come out of Channing Tatum's mouth was Jonah Hill's dick.
Hey-o!
And that's not even funny.
Ba-dum-bum-bum.
Jonah Hill should stick to doing dramas. At the rate he's going,
Jonah Hill should.
Yeah.
Oh.
He should go back and do another Moneyball, because not funny.
Well, I mean,
unfunny.
The Wolf of Wall Street, he was funny, and that was kind of a serious
movie. But he's okay. There's an Andy Richter who thinks he's a fucking Jimmy. You know what I mean? There's a fucking
him as the bear from the Revenant wasn't funny. Do you want to talk about the Mel Gibson?
You know what those guys are very victim susceptible to?
What's that?
Those guys, Seth Rogen and Jonah.
Yeah,
they think their shit's hilarious to each other.
Yeah.
And that's not, and you know, comics, this goes back to what comics do in an open mic.
Yeah.
They do shit for each other that isn't funny for everybody
else.
Well,
I mean, look, Jonah Hill's had a pretty big career at this
point.
Channing
Tatum, awful.
Channing Tatum, even, but you know.
And then Ryan Gosling went up there and did his little cutesy shtick with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that wasn't, that wasn't good. But again, you know.
Leave the funny, Ryan Gosling, here's what you do.
If women look at a handsome guy and you ask him if he's, I know I've beaten a dead horse over the last couple of weeks on this one, but when a woman looks at a handsome guy and you ask him if he's funny, they'll always say yes.
Ryan Gosling.
They'll always say yes. Always.
Ryan Gosling, here's your role.
I know.
Go out and smash world-class pussy.
He's not even
you know what I'm saying?
So apparently
why don't you go hang out over at the fucking Vogue office and pick up models?
Well,
that's what your job is.
Banging Eva Mendes.
Okay, good.
Good for him.
Your job is smashing world-class pussy. Your job is not being Mr. Funny Pants, okay?
Well,
guys are funny so that they can...
They're in the Big Short.
Guys get really, really funny so they can smash medium-level pussy.
Those guys made the mortgage crisis hilarious. I mean, come on.
Do you know there's guys who do 7 sets a night in L.A., in New York? They go out there and do... They're like, I'm going to go and do Governors in Long Island and then run back to the city and do sets so that they can try and sniff Amy Schumer's seat.
Yeah.
Whereas Ryan Gosling can be like, let me walk into elite modeling and pick up any of these fucking
things. I'm going to give you some... We were having this conversation on the telephone, and I said, not this conversation.
I'm on a roll with Ryan Gosling's dick.
Yeah, shut up, please. Maybe do I not have the television version of this? Oh, fuck, I don't think I do.
Are you just going to read the bleeps?
No, I was going to read who won the television categories at the Golden Globes, and I guess I don't have it.
Oh, man.
Because my feeling, it was you said, well, and I said, Corey, I wished I lived in a universe where these television shows were actually on my television. All of these shows. I just don't know what they are.
I'm going to name shows that won. Yeah. Here's the show that won. Mozart in the Jungle.
Yeah, good.
Who the fuck has ever watched
that? I actually know what that is because I have Amazon Prime Video, but I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. Okay, give me some more. Come on.
Here's one that won. My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, that's on the CW, and I only know about that because they plug it during Penn & Teller Fool Us. Which I've that girl's from YouTube or something. So,
You know, God damn it! Speaking of assholes of the year,
oh boy,
I forgot to mention an asshole of the year.
Yeah,
Grace Helwig. What was her name?
Greta Gerwig.
Helbig. Grace Helbig.
What is she?
YouTube star that they gave a show to on VH1. And
how's
she
that doing?
Fucking died. So
good, good.
Hard.
That makes me feel good.
Was on E! Online.
E! Online.
She went on and got a TV show on E! Online.
Yeah.
And it was so horrible that they canceled it after like 13 episodes. Like,
yeah, well,
eight episodes.
Look, unfortunately, we're going to have to get used to YouTubers being television stars, but they're not all going to make it. And actually, one of my favorite shows of the year, which again, I didn't watch any scripted television. I guess the show's scripted, but it's not really. But Adam Ruins Everything. That's a guy that's from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Conover. He's on College Humor. So. And that's a good show.
Yeah.
So I do like him. So I'm not completely writing off YouTube stars, but
well, you know what? And I actually like Billy Eichner.
Yeah.
I know I should hate it.
Yeah, you should.
But I do enjoy like Billy on the Street's funny.
Well, I think that's the companion show to Adam Ruins Everything, or they're on.
Yeah.
Or they're on the same channel
and
anyway. Yeah.
Difficult People, which is his like scripted sitcom show, is actually really funny.
Okay, I haven't seen
that's
that
on
either.
Hulu. There's another show.
The only scripted thing I saw was Master of None, which, by the way, that joke flopped. Did you see him with the Aziz?
Yeah.
when they went to him and he had a book about how to lose to Jeffrey Tambor in the acting category.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then Jeffrey Tambor didn't win the award.
Right, right. Well, you know, okay.
Whoops.
By the way, speaking of these categories.
I know.
Transparent is a comedy in what fucking universe?
It's a dark comedy. I mean, it's
more of a comedy than The Martian.
Well, that one.
What the fuck?
I mean, look, is there humor in The Martian? Yes. It's not a comedy.
Joy, which is a movie I liked,
yeah,
is funnier than The Martian. I would still not label it a comedy.
But, you know, I wonder if the producers have the say or if the Hollywood Foreign Press.
The Hollywood Foreign Press is a bunch of fucking people from Austria.
Yeah.
And German, you know, yeah, like people known for their comedy chops. There's fucking Hungarian,
and they're also from what I've read, like notorious that those are very, very suspicious in terms of that they're bought and paid for, and a lot of these things.
Well, I've told the Hollywood Foreign Press story before.
Did you?
I'm sure I did, but nobody, you know.
Quickly, give it to
Brent
us.
From Toronto. I'm sure will know this, well, but some of our super fans. No, I was doing a junket one time, and we were at like the Beverly Wilshire, one of those hotels, and there was a hallway,
yeah,
and it was like a sign that said lunch this way for junket, and I went in the wrong lunchroom.
Oh.
And I went into the Hollywood Foreign Press lunchroom, and I sat down, and I started talking to a guy named Gunther or Dieter or some shit. I loaded up like a plate, like they, you know, you just, at these things, you go through the buffet line, and you like, you know, and I loaded up a big plate of stuff, and I was sitting down talking to these guys. And they were like, oh, this is interesting. What do you like for? And I realized, like, I was in the wrong room.
Oh.
And this publicist finally noticed that I was not in the right room and got this look of fucking abject horror.
Oh.
And, like, the face went all the way. Like, oh, yeah, you know, I think you're in the wrong room.
Oh.
And I had to walk down the hall to the other
room. Oh, boy.
With all the schnooks from, you know. The schnooks from the St. Paul Press Pioneer.
How many cubes of cheese did you make off with from the Hollywood Foreign Press? Like, I mean, come on.
It was like a slide. It was like make your own sliders.
Anyway, God forbid.
I was like, you know,
go to the American Press where they're having peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or something.
No, we had good food.
Yeah,
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
It was fine. I was like, oh, let me go.
Idiots.
Let me go load up the other plate.
Well, they're probably.
But they like realized that I was exposed to the Hollywood Foreign Press and that.
But wouldn't the movie
shit.
Company be paying for that junket anyway?
Yeah, they were.
But
I'm just saying,
the
no, but they
press out
but
of their own room.
They were in a different room.
All right,
they were in a different room.
Fuck them.
And they realized that I was talking.
Maybe that's where the money gets handed. Maybe that's where the money's exchanged.
I just know that they
the blowjobs are given.
I could have sat there by the way and finished my fucking plate of lunch, but they had to usher me out of there as soon as they realized that I was talking to the foreign.
And press. I believe because it's Hollywood Foreign Press, it's a much smaller group of people voting. I think in the Golden
then the
Globes,
oh yo then
which
the,
makes it really susceptible.
Oh yeah,
to,
much it's much smaller than the
to
Academy.
To being fixed, you know, the Academy, the nominations from the Academy is done by a smaller group of people, but then the general voting is done by the whole Academy, which is thousands of people. So, but yeah, the Golden Globes were an okay show. I didn't hate it; it was fine. Mel Gibson, I don't know about that. I don't know.
There's people that weren't happy with Mel Gibson even being there.
No, and then Jervis kind of seemed like he made. He his peace with them, kind of?
He took a shot at him, but it made it kind of better.
It made Gibson look a little sympathetic.
Yeah, and then he bleeped that out. He said, what does sugar tits even mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know why you bleep that out.
Well, can't you just bleep out the tits?
No, they do it on some delay where it bleeps.
It's like a minute of silence, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Aye. All right.
So, yeah, The Martian, not a comedy.
No.
This fucking NR2 guy can go away.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. That's one that I'm going to see before we.
You know, everybody, the Birdman won all the
shit. Birdman was completely overhyped, but I've seen most of the top 10, and some of them are good. I mean,
here's the problem. The best fucking movie was Spotlight. Spotlight is not exciting or glamorous in any way. You know what I mean? It's a good movie. It's not a movie people want to see.
Right. Well, we'll review all these movies next time, but yeah, I'm just looking at who won. Tarantino's, it's enough of him. His speech was weird and no one liked it.
What, the Ennio Morricone?
Yeah, he went up there for Ennio Morricone. And
Jamie Foxx was funny when he ripped on...
well, he did a Steve Harvey bit. That was good. And and you know those guys must like each other from comedy, right?
People,
that they're rivals.
Well, people
on some
must
level.
Forget that Jamie Foxx was a stand-up guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Jamie Foxx, by the way, I interviewed him for Ray. Weird dude.
Oh, I think he's completely weird. Yeah.
Weird dude. He sat at the piano. And
I don't think
songs.
There's any. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Like I ended up like,
might be with Kate. What's her name? Tom Cruise's girl.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Kate.
It's not Kate Hudson.
No, what's her name? Katie.
Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes.
Yeah.
He like I ended up having like a longer interview with him because I think he was trying to vibe with me. Do you know what I mean? Like he was. Yeah. He'd be like. He wasn't conducting it like a regular interview. He was like, man, what are you? He's like playing songs for me. Like,
he
seems to just enjoy having an audience.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. I don't know.
It was an interesting guy. Anyway,
Inside Out won for best anime. Although the animated movies were not good this year, but I'll be talking about Inside Out next.
Let's talk about The Last Dinosaur.
It was nominated.
Pixar, important safety memo.
Well,
don't put two movies out in 6 months,
or put out two good ones.
but you know what I mean? The Last Dinosaur, The Good Dinosaur, could have been more successful.
Inside Out.
But they were still selling the fucking dolls for Inside Out.
Yeah.
And then they're like, get those out of the way so we can put these dinosaurs up.
So the Golden Globes was just all right. I didn't. Mr. Robot won, which I haven't seen.
It's all streaming shows.
On USA, but it was
You know, 5 years ago, everybody was going, what's AMC?
Yeah, no, I know.
It was 5 years ago.
But it's funny to see HBO.
Right.
Kind of HBO won, I think, one or two things, but they were largely shut out because now Netflix is the hot thing, Amazon is the hot
thing.
We're
at what we call peak television.
Yeah, it's too much.
There's
I've given up. I've washed my hands.
I think I saw a chart
of scripted television.
I think I saw a chart somewhere that was like there's 480 scripted shows.
Oh God!
And then that's not counting the fucking variety shows.
Yeah.
And the goddamn Bachelor. Yeah. Which I watched The Bachelor.
Oh.
Holy fuck.
Oh.
What?
I don't like The Bachelor.
No. I watched The Bachelor.
No, I don't like that you watch it.
Okay. I never watched The Bachelor.
You never should.
And I'm sitting there on the couch with my wife, and The Bachelor comes on. Well, I would never watch a nanosecond of that by myself. But with somebody else, it becomes fucking amazing.
You can hate watch something and goof on it, but, you know, life's too short. You got to watch good stuff. And
life's too short. Did that get another season?
Speaking of Ricky Gervais,
that's another HBO show.
Yeah, that one was not.
Like I said, 5 years ago, everybody was going, what's with all these fucking basic cable channels that are like suddenly coming out?
Sure,
And then 10 years before that, everybody's like, HBO's got good shows?
HBO's got good stuff.
HBO used to show Iron Eagle with Lou Gossett Jr.
Well, wasn't there a time when HBO couldn't win an Emmy?
Right.
Because it wasn't broadcast and they had to open it up. So there was remember the Cable Ace Awards? They used to have those because the cable people weren't on television. And now the streaming guys.
It's another thing, by the way.
Which are the streaming guys, you could argue they're not even television.
We're going to be giving fucking PewDiePie awards soon.
Well, why not? You know, YouTube, why can't YouTube shows win?
They will
Golden
be.
Golden Globes.
They'll be next.
Yeah.
We'll be giving the fucking Extreme Kitchen guys, or what are the guys who like make, you know,
I don't
giant
know.
Cheeseburgers, and they're like, let's stuff a cheeseburger inside a pizza and then throw it in a turkey and roast it in the oven. And then we'll wrap it in bacon.
That's a YouTube video?
There's like
I
channels.
I would never
like
watch
that.
I don't know what
there's
that is.
I can't even think of
I'm
it.
I'm sure there are. I just never watch it.
There's 800 fucking gaming channels.
Oh, yeah. Well, the gaming guys. Yeah, those guys. You know, but that stuff's not.
Angry Video Game Nerd. And
yeah. Well, I've seen some of those, but yeah, I don't. But yeah, I do feel like there's too much
YouTube's
television.
A fucking rabbit hole.
And listen, and I think scripted television is great, and I think it's probably the best it's ever been. But you also can't
go through
bombard. I mean, I know that it's like it's going to shake out where there's going to be less of it because ultimately, when you have so much,
maybe this
it has to shake out where there's less.
Maybe
but,
this didn't premiere in time, but The Man in the High Castle was on Amazon.
Yeah, it's on Amazon too,
and I thought that was a really good show.
See, I haven't had time,
and so you know, I worked. Yeah, that one I binged. I watched all of them.
I don't know how you get time for it. I have no time. I feel like I get about 90 minutes a day to watch something, and I feel like I'm better off. Well, for the last month, I've been watching 75 goddamn movies. I mean, the list of movies I've been watching is insane, and I'll talk about them all next week. But when it comes to scripted television, I just go, God. But, you know, I feel like I watch one, and then I go, sometimes I feel like I'd rather not see any of them than only watch two of them sometimes.
Mm.
Because they feel like it's the story that takes place over 10 episodes, and I can't get through it. You know,
Man in the High Castle really took its time to get in.
Yeah, I see. I feel like if I watch one of those, that's not even. It's not even worth watching the one because I'm not going to finish it. Because it's 10 hours.
Well, I don't. Master of None is hard for me to get through.
Let nah, it's, I only got through three of those.
That show is
half hour.
That show is mildly funny.
It's okay. I,
but
know,
that's my problem. I'm like, I don't need mildly funny.
I don't know what I need.
Bring me comedy.
I need relaxation.
I think the you need relaxation.
I need.
You're
I
as relaxed a human being as almost anyone.
No, but I'm saying if I'm watching television, if I can just watch, like, you know, Nathan for You, which was one of my favorite shows. It's a half hour. It's funny. I don't need, if I miss next week's episode, it's okay. I mean, I never miss an episode of that, but you know what I mean? There's no, you know, it comes on, it starts, it ends, I'm done. That's what I like. I don't want to have to watch and then keep hanging on a thing.
You know, millennials don't
hit the button.
I feel like millennials don't even like watch television anymore. Like, they don't like watching television, which means I want somebody to do the work for me.
Yeah.
Sometimes I got to stream stuff. You spend 20 minutes looking through the fucking file.
Yeah, you look through the guide.
You're going through the shit to find the streaming.
All right.
Then I end up watching Bar Rescue.
Well, at least Bar Rescue is the thing. You know, you don't have to watch all of them.
And then I watched the Bar Rescue follow-up back to the bar where they go back. They had the guy from Stand Up Scottsdale.
Oh, did they?
And they brought him back.
What happened to Stand Up Scottsdale?
Well, like 20 minutes after they left.
It's actually a pretty good, if you're into comedy.
Yeah.
We
always wonder why they don't do.
I know the name of the show because that Mr. Ridley was asking for it. It's called Meat. I think it's Meat Sauna. If you're looking for
the episode
from the original.
Well,
one.
That was because they had their kitchen was too small
but,
and they were the smell.
But
of
that's the
burnt
but
meat
don't look. But
the
if you
thing.
Try to find it on a guide and you're looking for Scottsdale stand-up Scottsdale, you're not going to find it.
Well,
so what happened with it?
They brought the guy back and he yelled at John and called him an asshole.
Yeah.
John rebranded it as the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
The Laugh Factory left after 2 months.
Well, I'm sure they were having to pay the Laugh Factory for the name.
Right.
And then they probably
and
stopped
he
doing
couldn't,
that.
Well, he said, and I give him credit for this, he was like, I couldn't afford to bring in the guys that the Laugh Factory name brought with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we've seen that happen to clubs.
Oh, absolutely. They don't have the budget.
They'll brand themselves after one of these chains, and then they got to bring in guys that they can't pay for. Anyway, but he was also a complete asshole. John had built a big green room for the comics, and then he was like, that was fucking ridiculous, and he cut the green room in half and turned it into storage and filled it with boxes. And it was like, oh good, he's like, yeah, these comics can sit on a fucking stool and put a thumb in there. It was really that's fascinating to watch that episode.
Well, any comedy clubs, I mean, we know so much behind the scenes stuff at comedy clubs that stuff always works for
what
me.
Are comedy clubs, Joel? I remember they used to have some.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to say goodnight.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. I want to say, we really have to go.
That's a whole other.
It's a whole.
We'll be here till 4 a.m. on that topic.
Listen, there's going to be lots of comedy club coverage in the future here on Joel Radio. And there's going to be lots of, you know, inside baseball that people like. But we'll leave them. We'll leave them with a little Flight of the Conchords. Very appropriate way to go out.
That's right.
He's not dead. He's in space.
May you
Sorry.
Explore the cosmos.
Exactly.
In peace now.
This is great, though.
Farewell, Starman.
Yeah. Is it cold out in space, Bowie? Borrow my jumper if you like, Bowie. Does the cold of deep space make your nipples get pointed, Bowie? Do you good night, everybody. Thanks to Corey. Joel Radio. I bet you do. Next time, Movie Mania. All the best movies and the worst movies of 2015. Do you have several all the Oscar-nominated movies I will have seen. Space, and it'll be a great rocking time in 2 weeks. Receiving transmission from David Bowie's nipple antennae. Do you read me, Lieutenant? I forgot how funny. I haven't listened to this in a while. I said, do you read me, Lieutenant Bowie? Come on, everybody. This is Bowie to Bowie. Do you hear me out there, man? I love this. All right, let's get out of here. Say goodnight. Good night, Corey. Oh, yeah, see you next time on Joel Radio. Bye. How far out are you, man? I'm pretty far out. That's pretty far out, man. I'm orbiting Pluto. Drawn in by its gravitational pull. I'm jamming out with the McJaggernauts.
soon. And they think it's pretty cool now. I've known, but I'll have to turn my ship around. Ooh, it's so crazy to see. Yeah, I'm picking it up on my LSD screen. Can you see the stratosphere?